located in Texas. It broadcasts music, news, information, and cultural programming from national distributors, as well as locally produced offerings and more. Your donated vehicle goes to support this unique voice for yourself and others. Have an old car taking up space in your driveway? Donate it to KPFT now. Just call 1-855-KPFT-CAR or visit kpft.org to donate your old vehicle to support KPFT. Your contribution is appreciated. This is 90.1 KPFT Houston, kpft.org worldwide.
You are listening to 90.1 FM, KPFT Houston.
Listeners should be aware that the following program contains language and audio images which may be found disturbing and may not be suitable for your snotty-nosed little brat who probably cusses like a sailor behind your back anyway. Parental discretion is advised.
Technology Bites.
Welcome to the show, everyone. Welcome to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
And
I'm,
he... Oh.
Jay Lee, let's...
I'm so used to him not being here.
I know.
We were so close to the perfect show.
I'm Lee, Dave.
It was all perfect and... Oh.
Welcome to Technology Bites. Hi, I'm Jay Lee.
Groove House.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm sorry I did it. It's my fault.
Groove House.
We haven't seen this guy in a while.
We haven't seen Lee in a while.
As I pointed, Lee, yeah.
I haven't been around.
I've been out, and then you've been traveling. You're at CES having fun, and then coming back, and then...
I was at E3.
E3,
though. Oh, my bad.
CES was the last time I was gone.
I said E3 in the lobby, but then, yeah, I just...
Yeah, you said...
You knew what you were talking about before.
Before. Now I get in here, and it doesn't matter in here anymore.
In here, we suspend the ability to have conversations and routine. Yeah.
We don't want to blow all the conversation in the lobby. Then we'll have nothing to talk about here.
Although if we'd have practiced.
No, so yes, I was.
I rehearsed in front of a mirror earlier.
I sit in front of a mirror and practice my radio smiles. So you can hear the smile in my voice. Now I was at I was in Los Angeles at the Electronic Entertainment Expo, the game show basically. So it's a yearly show.
Come on down.
Come on down. It's mainly an industry event. So it's where all of the publishing houses and game developers get together and show off their latest games, generally to the press.
And to each other, and to
big companies that they want to, that the publishers want to sell ads to, and get shelf space in and form big deals so that you can slam some Doritos and Mountain Dew while you're playing Halo.
Extreme.
And yeah, all that stuff. It's a neat show. I actually was telling the guys out in the lobby, I didn't actually get to the show floor even once because I was so busy. When you're I dreamed about going to E3 for a long time. From the first time I heard about the show, I was in the early 90s.
Yeah, everybody's got to have a dream.
Incarnation of E3 is this? What year?
This year is, I don't know, it's 2015?
No. Like E3, 15, how many years? E3? Like, we're going to DEF CON 23.
Oh, I don't know. The show's been around forever.
Well, it's at least the third year because it's E3.
Yeah, what does the 3 stand for?
Electronic Entertainment Expo.
Yeah, but where does the 3 come into this? Aren't you glad you came back?
So anyway, I had been wanting to go for a long time, and I'm finding out that when you go, I mean, this is going to sound complaining and dumb, but when you go to these things, like, you don't just get to walk around and see all the cool games and everything. You actually have to work. And so, it's like you got to show up and, like, see all these cool games. But then, like, I got to write all about it. And, like, it was work. It was hard work.
But don't you get some kind of, like, exclusive access to have them? Like, I remember when I went to CES, the one time I went to CES, I was hanging out with Dwight Silverman. And he had all these interviews lined up, and one of them was with Microsoft. Mm-hmm. And Microsoft had their own, they were not on the showroom floor, they had their own media set up and let you play with the new Xbox and all that stuff.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I mean, there's lots of that. But when you're working the show, then you have to then go from there and then spend the next, like, 3 hours writing up what you saw because it's got to be published that evening. And so, yeah, I mean,
it's... The more awesome I see, the more work it means for me.
Pretty much, yes.
I really love this column.
So it's really, I mean, you see the pictures from the show floor. I didn't see any of that.
Don't die.
Excuse me. Yeah, I'm still getting over a cold. The post-E3, like, sickness plague. Now, well, when you go there to work, though, you don't really see the show floor much because... When you work at a high-profile publication like I do, you end up taking meetings the entire time. So really all I did was move from one closed-door publisher meeting to another closed-door publisher meeting, and then, like, real quick try to, like, cram down, like, a cold hotel catering sandwich, like, while perched on the edge of a bench with my laptop oriented just this way so I can get the show floor Wi-Fi so I can file my story before running to the next one.
So it's almost like you didn't even go to it.
I really don't really feel like I was there. I mean, I was in my hotel room for quite a bit.
You got a glimpse of the floor, though, right?
I saw the floor. Like, once I went on the floor to try to get to a meeting I had to go to, and I realized I couldn't get there by cutting through. I had to, like, go out. So, like, I walked, like, onto the floor and saw the edge of, like, the Oculus booth and then turned around and, like, left.
Goodbye, E3. His first year was 1995.
But it was fun.
E3 2021.
I got to see a lot of space games. I got to see there's a game coming out called No Man's Sky that is going to be totally neat. It's an all procedurally generated. So it's like Minecraft but in space. That's going to be really cool.
Did you see Star Wars Battlefront?
I did not see Star Wars. I saw the presentations for it. I didn't go to a meeting about it, but I did see the big presentations for it. I saw the PC Gaming Expo. I get to meet a lot of neat developers and stuff. I had, on the whole, I had a great time.
Groovehouse got to really see Tapper.
That's the greatest arcade game ever.
Did you see the virtual reality version of Minecraft?
the HoloLens thing. The Microsoft HoloLens. I saw the presentation of it, but I didn't get to try it on.
Is there a W in HoloLens?
HoloLens? No, but so two of my coworkers got to actually try the HoloLens demo, and they said it was excellent, and they liked it. The killer demo was showing, like, the God's Eye view of Minecraft, where you put the thing on and look down at the table, front of you, like, there's your Minecraft world, and you can, like reach down, like some benevolent god, and play Minecraft like you're playing with Legos. It was really neat. It was a neat show.
Did you go to Bethesda? Did you see Fallout 4?
I didn't. So we didn't do a closed door meeting with Fallout 4. They didn't have anything extra to show, beyond what they showed in their demo. So my coworkers, Kyle and Sam, who did go to the Bethesda meetings, basically said it was like exactly what they showed on stage, except you could ask them questions.
Okay.
Which they would all answer with, "We're not really releasing any more information."
So no one got any console time in front of it. No one got to play it.
No. Well, okay. They got to like see it. They didn't get to play it. They had like Bethesda people there who were showing it off, but they didn't like hand the controllers.
Like,
to
okay,
the,
you can't run into this wall. You can't double jump. You can't
enjoy
do this.
It on the same level as we do.
Couldn't do that. Couldn't do any of that. It was fun. So that's where I've been getting my journalism on.
And then when did you actually start to get sick? Was it after?
That was last week. That's why I missed last week's show. You know what? Actually, I'm pretty sure why I got sick was not E3. So I not to take too much of the show up here, but I got a call I got a call after E3, so I got back on Thursday or Friday, I think. Yeah, I got back on Thursday or Friday, and I got a call on Friday from Philip of the Houston area Apple user group saying that their speaker had canceled, and they were looking for someone to come and fill in real quick and do their Saturday presentation. This is the Houston area Apple users group, HAAUG.org. It's a great bunch of guys. So I cobbled together a quick presentation and went there. And by the way, I looked up to see who the speaker that canceled was, and it was Dwight Silverman. Canceled. Thanks, Dwight.
You're kind of filling in for him a lot these days.
I know. I feel like I should be drawing a Chronicle paycheck here at some point. So, so I went there. I went to the users group meeting, and there was a fellow there who was super nice, asked a lot of incredibly insightful questions about the presentation, and was coughing the entire time. And I think that guy actually gave me his plague. So I don't think it was actually the E3 plague that got me. I think it was the iFunk, courtesy of having to fill in for Dwight. So, thanks, Dwight. Really
took a bullet for Dwight.
Dwight
could have been out of the
game. Well, because Dwight's pretty old. This kind of sickness really could have laid him up, you know, pretty hard.
The stream of kitty pictures could have slowed down.
Yeah, you saved the cats.
Milo totally appreciates all that. It's upsetting that I know the name of his cats.
I know. I was just thinking.
I never asked him, like, hey, what are the name of your cats, Dwight? But yet they're ingrained in Milo and Venus.
They're fed into you from your Twitter feed.
I lost other valuable knowledge to put Milo and Venus in my head. That's what I'm most upset about right here.
That's worse.
Yeah. Well, because every time I even look at my phone on Facebook, it's my mom's looking back at me.
Can't remember your password. Can't remember quite the syntax on how to do that Perl loop.
I'll type in
meow
three times
Venus.
Yeah, I just gave up a regular expression or two to store those names.
Can you write a regular expression to select all text that reads Milo and Venus?
Cat. I can run cat.
Cat and grep for cats.
That's all we ever do.
Like send cat to DevNull.
Dorky.
All right. Well, welcome to the show. We're glad you could tune in. We've got Lee back. We're very happy. We've got Barrett here. We got Groovehouse is back. He's been kind of being a little bit of a jet setter himself. So we're glad to have him back.
Island hopping.
Hell yeah.
Island driving.
I actually just got back from the land of barbecue.
Hmm. Yeah, dude. You are moving around quite a bit.
Just did a few things over the summer, you know.
Yeah.
Hanging out with Mick and the guys. Yeah. Going to Hawaii.
Island hopping.
Bag busting. Rocking.
All kinds of good fun stuff.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to include you. I could let you go back to
I was just waiting for the phone to ring.
Just so I can ignore it.
All right. Visit us online at geekradio.com. That is our website. And you'll notice if you go to geekradio.com, there is a notification up that we are having our geek gathering on Friday.
We are? This Friday?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't have the day
thanks
off.
Thanks for mentioning that. That's good to know.
They told us that. They told us we don't get Friday off. And I was like, everybody else I know in real life has Friday off, except like me. Do you have Friday off?
I do, but we just rolled a very large live project out, so I don't really have. We'll
see. Well, then
you
don't
count. That goes. I don't count. Once you're salaried, they just don't.
Well, you work a normal whatever you know.
Whatever normal means.
9 to noon.
Yeah, you come to geek gatherings when on non-holiday Fridays, right?
I haven't made a 2015 geek gathering yet, so I'm hoping this will be my first. Don't jinx it.
Can we talk about one last E3 thing? No. Did you see Super Mario Maker? That looks kind of neat.
I didn't go to all these meetings that you care about. I went to the meetings that I cared about.
Like,
and these do not intertwine.
Oh no!
Was it a game that involved spaceships? Because I went to those meetings.
No, that's kind of cool. You actually get to go in and make your own Mario levels.
Yes, that does look awesome.
So.
Well, yes. So to answer your other question, there is a geek gathering Friday. Will you be joining us?
Yes.
Or did it surprise you?
I'm a little bit surprised because I had it in my head. It was the 10th. but I will be there on the 3rd.
I decided that, you know, we just stay on the first Friday. And
well, who made you the
Okay, so Geek Gathering, July 3rd, and that's Barrett time. That was easy.
Out of control.
We didn't play the intro.
Perfect show.
We hope you'll join us on Friday if you don't have other 4th of July plans. You should probably stay, you know, in town just to be safe because, you know, rain or something.
No, this is not the large 20.
No,
okay.
I mean, the 20th anniversary.
It's kind of, I know it's kind of fuzzy in the middle anyway.
It is.
So.
I don't know what to do. I want to have
I think technically, I think that by circumstance, et cetera, that it definitely it's going to be this fall when the weather is more amenable.
Yeah. I was about to say,
and
let's not put a whole bunch of
geeks
out in the baking Texas summer. Let's not do that.
Like I was thinking October might be good, you know.
Febtober.
December.
Huh? Febtober?
Febtober.
I don't know. We'll probably do it at cons unless we could find some exotic venue, which we haven't been able to find. But just do it up with a little bit of promotion, get a good DJ or band or something in there. And
your band could play.
I don't. No.
Come on.
And then Jake could also bartend his own 20th anniversary party and maybe even busboy too. And
let's just go to your house.
Valet.
Come on. Let's just tell everyone where I live. What could possibly go wrong there?
What about the old
invite to your house?
We go to the old compact headquarters.
We could do it rave style. We could just break into an old server room.
What was that?
Off the halon.
Just follow the dark
fiber. Get some lasers.
Was that EV1? The planet?
Oh, yeah. What's going on over there? That's the downtown one. That's still occupied, surely, although I haven't
been
by there.
That's still there, I'm sure.
It's the planet now.
In my mind, the way that it needs to happen is it needs to happen at a place that's already got alcohol bar in place and the ability to charge for it, you know, because we're not going to buy a bunch of alcohol and try to treat the world or whatever, and it needs to be
not after how the world treated us.
Now it needs to be something with some built-in infrastructure, you know, like we've done it in the 10th and the 15th. The 10th anniversary party was at Dean's, mm-hmm. and that was very nice. The 15th anniversary was at House of Blues, and that was very nice.
We need to get a reserved room because the issue is any place that would be cool on a Friday night anyway is going to be already kind of full, I would think. You know, I don't really want to mix our crowd with the normals.
Well,
too much.
What are the reasons?
I don't want to mix it up.
I don't want to get anybody beat up.
Well, I think that, you know, unfortunately, you can't count on the weather. So if we wanted to do it as an outdoor thing, it's hard to count. You can't count on the weather. So you have that variable going on. So it's just, maybe we'll just wait till 25 or something.
No.
We're working on it. If you have any ideas, certainly feel free to contact us and let us know if you've got a venue or an idea for what we could do. But I think finding a good DJ, finding a nice place to do it, and then just really promoting it because it's a kind of a big deal, then we'll do that. So we're working on it. All right. So anyway, Geek Radio, irc.cuckoo.com, and channel Tech Bites. And, you know, if you want to send us a message during the show, go to Geek Radio and use the contact form. So let's go ahead and go out to San Antonio, do the Technology Bites Info Shot with Peter Hughes. Take it away, Info Shot.
It's the Technology Bites Info Shot. Technology news and commentary by Peter Hughes. Injected directly into your skull.
Well, if you're a regular listener to the show, you've heard us talk about on laptop purchases, you know, often relating to Apple, but frankly, applying anywhere, that the thing is that Intel's, you know, processor release schedule is kind of screwy, and that what's happened is the Haswell, Broadwell, that kind of stuff had gone late, and that the new processor, the new hotness, was coming this fall. Well, now there's confirmation that the first Skylake chips, that's the name of it, are coming in the first week of August. So that makes that possible. The first Skylake chips will be high-end gaming processors that can be overclocked and will be launched on or before August 7th during the Gamescom conference in Cologne, Germany, which runs from August 5th to 9th. This is according to a source familiar with Intel's plan, and it reported in PC World. Intel will also shed more technical details about Skylake at its Intel Developer Forum, which will be between August 18th and 20th in San Francisco. They're going to talk about how Skylake will improve the experience of using Microsoft Windows 10, which will be in PCs starting July 29th. So that's, you know, there's sort of that coming too. Intel, of course, declined to comment on the launch of Skylake chips, but you can definitely expect Skylake chips for mainstream desktops and laptops to come in quick order during or after Intel's developer forum. The first ones will be branded sixth generation core processors and offer great performance and reduced power consumption, Intel said on an IDF technical session page. Intel's goal with Skylake is to make PC usage more convenient. So Intel has talked about wire-free technologies in Skylake, so PCs could charge and transfer data to peripherals wirelessly. Dell, Hewlett-Packard, and Asus will ship Windows 10 PCs based on Skylake in the second half of this year. It's not clear when the chips will reach Mac, and Intel doesn't tend to speak on Apple's behalf. I would think I'll speak on Apple's behalf. I'll just take, you know, the wild guess. Apple is not going to let Dell, Hewlett-Packard, and Asus ship stuff with the latest and greatest processor for months and months before they put something in their own machines. So I would think that this fall, probably before Christmas, it's fairly likely that there will be some Skylake updates and maybe Apple has some other plans to do some more things that I don't know and I haven't seen any good rumors about. But, you know, that Skylake is the new hotness. You know, the deal is that there are features of Skylake that are already known. Asus last month showed all-in-ones and mini desktops based on Skylake with support for the new DDR4 memory and USB 3.1 data transfer. PCs based on Skylake will also have ports based on Thunderbolt 3, the whole USB Type-C thing from the new MacBook, and can transfer data at 40 gigabits per second. So, you know, so there's the overclocking thing for people on that. Intel's hurried to get Skylake to PC so it can close the curtains on the troubled predecessor Broadwell chips, which were delayed due to manufacturing issues on the 14 nanometer process. Intel's resolved the manufacturing issues, so Skylake processors are rolled out on time. So it should be interesting to see. The big thing is going to be to see, obviously they're talking about the energy efficiency. So the main thing is to see how efficient are they relative to their performance. So it'll be nice when people start getting machines in hand to see what kind of battery life, including what kind of, at the same time getting performance that we get with Skylake. In I don't know, vandalism or terrorism, you make the call. There's been a string of attacks in California on one of the core portions of the internet, and it has the FBI searching for suspects. The latest disruption occurred yesterday morning when three fiber optic cables were cut in Alameda County in the Bay Area. The interruption affected internet access for individuals and businesses throughout Northern California and was fixed early Wednesday morning. It's the 11th time in the past year that an individual or group of individuals have vandalized fiber optic cables in the Bay Area. The first such attack occurred on July 6, 2014 in Berkeley. FBI Special Agent Greg Wuthrich told Engadget, the FBI is coordinating with local law enforcement partners as these cuts are happening in multiple cities and jurisdictions. The cables belonged to Level 3 and Zayo. I've not heard of Zayo, but in order to access the cables, the vandals had to remove manholes and enter underground vaults. While the cut lines were fixed within a day, it does highlight how easy it is to disrupt the internet within the physical world. In a statement, the FBI asked for the public to contact it if anyone saw anything suspicious at one of the sites and added that, quote, the individuals may appear to be normal telecommunications maintenance workers or possess tools consistent with that job role. So instead of the internet being brought down by a virus or super hackers or aliens and stuff, it turns out that some idiot with a set of bolt cutters could pretty well severely disrupt how you get your news and cat videos and do business. And so while you're feeling vulnerable with somebody with bolt cutters can take out your internet access, there's a new issue. You know, if you use virtual private networks, VPNs, for extra privacy and security, there's a study published this week that suggests that such networks may not be as safe as they are commonly made out to be. In fact, because of a vulnerability known as IPv6 leakage, many of them can expose user information to prying eyes, according to a paper from researchers at Sapienza University of Rome and Queen Mary University of London. The paper is called A Glance Through the VPN Looking Glass, IPv6 Leakage and DNS Hijacking in Commercial VPN Clients, which I guess the title kind of says it all. The report describes a study conducted late last year that examined 14 popular commercial VPN providers around the world. They tested the VPNs by attempting two kinds of attacks: passive monitoring, where a hacker might simply collect the user's unencrypted information, and DNS hijacking, where the hacker would redirect the user's browser to a controlled web server by pretending to be a popular site like Google or Facebook. What they found was unnerving. 11 of the 14 providers leaked information, including the websites the user was accessing and the actual content of the user's communications. Isn't that why you're VPNing, if you're at the coffee shop or any of that? The only three that didn't were private internet access, Mulvad, and Viper VPN. TorGuard offered a way around the problem, they noted, but it wasn't enabled by default. They also examined the security of various mobile platforms when using VPNs and found they were much more secure when using iOS, but were still vulnerable to leakage using Android. So that's something to keep in mind. Interactions with websites running HTTPS encryption were not leaked, the researchers noted. So if you make sure that you use HTTPS, that would help you if you're looking for the security. One factor in the leakage is while network operators are increasingly deploying IPv6, the VPNs most only protect IPv4 traffic right now. And the other thing they found is that many VPN service providers still rely on outdated tunneling protocols such as PPTP that can be easily broken through brute force attacks. For alternatives for people seeking anonymity, the authors point to Tor, along with Linux distributions such as Tails, as potential alternatives. Enterprise VPNs, meanwhile, are largely unaffected by the leakage problems. So for your business, the one that you get from work, that probably works. But if you're doing the companies, you may want to be thinking about if you're relying on that for privacy. You may want to do some research on what VPN service you're using and see if they got some problems. And finally, it's sort of fascinating. Internet snark has risen to, large levels. The Gamergate thing sort of showed it. But now this week there were two different Twitter Q&As that apparently if a person is kind of controversial in any way, you may want to not do a Twitter Q&A. there were two this week. The writer E.L. James, who wrote 50 Shades of Grey, had a Twitter Q&A, and so did would-be presidential candidate Bobby Jindal. Taking no political position on Governor Jindal and no, I don't know, literary critiques position on E.L. James. But apparently, because they are controversial figures, the majority of tweets were basically people insulting and burning them badly. First up, E.L. James. You're familiar with most people have heard of 50 Shades of Grey. You can hate her for her painfully bad writing. You can hate her for the fact that 50 Shades of Grey began as fan fiction of the Twilight series, or you can hate her for inaccurately depicting BDSM and for framing the abusive relationship between two protagonists as the height of romance. Take your pick, because Twitter users certainly did. Somebody, Trevor Donovan at Trev Don, tweeted, "What do you dislike more, independent strong woman or the English language?" Ask E.L. James. Hashtag Ask E.L. James. Another person tweeted, are you going to answer any of these questions, or do you need Stephanie Meyer, the person who wrote Twilight, to do a Twitter chat first? And then the best one, if E.L. James asks for these tweets to stop, does that mean she really wants them to continue? Sort of the BDSM thing. It goes on and on. You can go to the geekradio.com, and we've links to all the articles that we use and all the source material we use for the show. Or you can always look up the hashtag Ask E.L. James. Or you can also look at the Bobby Jindal, which is his is hashtag Ask Bobby. The main issue for him, which if you're going to go on the internet, when you're widely known for anti-science views and sort of hardline religious rhetoric in your politics, it's not really a great idea to go on to Twitter and ask people to ask you questions. Because then you get tweets like, did Jesus ride dinosaurs with or without a saddle? Ask Bobby. Actually, there was a lot more variety on the Bobby Jindal ones, but a lot of them are very political, and I'll let you read them to have your own opinions. I don't want to put them out for that. Although one for any politician of whatever stripe, if they do a Twitter ask me anything kind of thing, this is probably the best one for a politician is, how does it feel to sell your soul for political gain and yet not gain anything politically? So just beware of the snark. If you ever become a celebrity, just make sure that you did it by being beloved or loved, because if you're not, you're not going to have a very good time. And that's the news.
Thanks a lot, Lefty.
I didn't go on the internet and have him snark at me.
You could have talked about the 50 Shades of Grey one.
He did. Do TPP?
I've insulted a hidden 50 Shades fan, Jay.
Yeah, 50 Shades of Jay.
It hurts so good.
Depending on how you pronounce the GIF, it could be Jay Pride Day.
Every day is Jay Pride Day.
Yeah. All right. Welcome to my rainbow, everyone.
Yeah, a lot happened this last week.
Yeah, it did. There was
uproars about many things, flags and colors and suches.
You're aching
unions.
To talk about TPP.
I want to talk about TPP.
All right, talk about TPP.
I don't know that much about it. I was hoping someone else would know more than me.
I just know the initial sound very.
No. What does it actually stand for?
Trans-Pacific Partnership.
So
the Pony
less,
People.
It's the EFF that's kind of involved. It's kind of like a super NAFTA, if you want to look at it that way. And what it does is it codifies a lot of things between a lot of different nations, and a lot of it takes aim on intellectual property.
Well, they've never leaked a lot of it, right? WikiLeaks was offering a bunch of money to get people.
Well, so here's
to
the deal. So this would usually be something that would get passed by Congress. Let me, this is what I do know about it. So the things that it touches, it's kind of like a free trade thing, but it looks at things
it's
like...
It's supposedly a free trade thing.
Well, yeah, that's what they're saying. So it's not that good. But for instance, it criminalizes if you're doing file sharing, or if you download something, or if you were like to host some files, before the copyright owner or the rights owner of that would have to sue you. What the TPP does, one of the provisions that has in there, is that your own governments can sue you without actually having anyone say, hey, that's wrong. So they can levy fines, they can do stuff like that.
We think that's in there.
I found some leaks. So
it
there,
was on
there
the
some
internet, we know.
There.
Well, yeah, because I know WikiLeaks got four chapters out of the 16 or 18 a month or two ago, but those versions were old. And they so they put out a kind of a bounty, which they compared to the Peace Prize by Nobel.
They put it, right? It was like $100,000.
And they were like, this isn't like, you know, money to pay somebody to be a whistleblower. This is somebody who does the right thing. We will give this money to them in appreciation for them being a good citizen.
So no one really knows. It's a lot of different powers are involved. No one. It's still kind of fuzzy what's going on. But at one point, it was going to have to get through both houses until something was passed. It was like a fast-track bill. And more or less what's happened now is the President Obama has full power to negotiate this in secrecy without having to report to us, to Congress, to the House, to anybody.
Yeah, everybody was freaking out about it, and then they added it as a rider on. I forgot what the bill was. It was some random bill. They added it as a rider on and got through.
Yeah, and then during this last week when it was all rainbows and flags, it just sneaked on through and no one. So now it might be out of our hands and we're not actually even going to know how far reaching or, you know, what it encompasses until after the fact. And even then, it might be kind of tough. So I'm not super happy about it. I usually take my clues from the EFF and, you know, what I can find out online. So it doesn't look happy no matter which way you slice it.
Throw away your computer, live in a cave.
Yeah.
Throw away your computer, live in a cave.
Or I'll just run, you know, some shady VPNs.
But we just heard in the news how VPNs are not as safe as you might think.
Shady. Yeah. Actually, I knew we had some friends that, I'm not without singing names, some people that we know here in the studio that broke.
Was it Jay?
It wasn't Jay. it was the Norse god of mischief. Broke some phone protocols to where they were common to among all the different carriers, and he got uber paranoid for a little while. And we would talk, you know, here and there, but he wouldn't use any of the VPNs, and he also wouldn't bounce outside of the U.S. It had to be very close, very local, and none of the VPN services he trusted. So, and I trust his paranoia. So, therefore, yeah, I don't think that's the way to go.
Without mentioning any names, who was it?
Do you know the god of mischief? Do you know that name? Norse mythology?
Yes. Yeah.
And then, do you know that's the handle?
Yes.
No. Loki? You don't know Loki? We might as well say Loki.
Oh, okay. Loki.
Yeah.
You can say Loki.
Yeah, that's why I realize that's silly. It's a hand. That's why he has a handle.
I can't use his secret name.
Everyone with Google is figuring out exactly who we're talking
about.
Oh, my
God. They know my public key.
My public key got stolen.
I found it on a key server with a bunch of other stolen public keys. You know, speaking of which, that actually brings up kind of a good point, is if you do want to try to, like my wife is, God love her, she's texting me here while we're talking.
God love her.
And she's talking about...
nobody else will.
She's talking about encrypted email. A friend of hers asked for my phone number so that she could ask for instructions on how to set up encrypted email because she wanted apparently to communicate, to send like an encrypted document to her bank via email. And Laura, fortunately, didn't give my number to her friend because, I mean, you know, it sounds like kind of a simple thing. Like, yeah, I want to send this document to my bank and email it to them encrypted. But, it, you know, as you know, and you know, you guys in the booth know.
You've got to be on the same page with the bank.
Like, yeah. Just not even that. Like, how would you describe setting up PGP or GPG?
Well, see, first you've
got to
go create your key pair, and then you should probably upload your public key to a key server.
First,
then you need
no
to protect this and change permissions on
that. When they receive it.
And then you import it into your keychain, and then you do this. Then you sign it, and then you get it signed. And then...
The main thing is to contact the bank and ask them if they have a secure messaging system that you
generally,
can
have like a Posta or a Tumbleweed or something they can upload.
Well, a lot of bank sites, I know that Chase, for example, has. You can log into the Chase site.
They have like an encrypted inbox.
Yeah, you can. So they'll send you an email to say that you've got a message in your encrypted mailbox, so you can go check that. So that's an option.
Well, where I was going with this is it comes back to something we've talked about it before. Even basic security, basic encrypted communication over email, technology that is almost as old as the internet, still has such a high barrier to entry that unless someone has a significant technical grounding, it's not even worth explaining how to do it because
it's so damn
complicated.
No one's been able to get it close. There were a lot of really nice, really high caliber PGP and GPG plugins for like Thunderbird and stuff like that about 8 or 9 years ago, but no one really embraced it, and the guys that were maintaining the project just kind of said, meh. You know, we don't
well,
really
and even,
keep it up
I mean,
anymore.
You know, I'm relatively skilled, and for me to send, like, I use, mainly use Outlook, and unfortunately, because of work, we're required to use Outlook. But if I'm sending an encrypted email and I'm not using Outlook's S/MIME stuff, if I'm using GPG, PGP, GPG, PGP, I mean, it's like, write the email, like, select all of it, go to services, go to encrypt text, pick from the list of keys I've got locally who I want to send it to, sign it, type my password in, and then take this thing, make a new email, make sure it's set to text only, paste this encrypted block in, and then send it. And then receiving it, to decrypt it on the other end. It's like the same process in reverse with copying and pasting.
What needs to happen, people need to realize what's going on. The same kind of push that a lot of companies, a lot of browsers made with the move from HTTP to HTTPS. You know, they kind of need to follow suit and, you know, build encryption into, like, if Gmail stepped up and, you know, I don't know if Yahoo or whatever, but if a few of the large providers stepped up that offered webmail, and then a few of the, you know, I guess, what is there, just like Thunderbird and Outlook now?
There's lots of others. There's mail.app for
mail.app. But if they would actually build in, just even just go with GPG, you know, build in something free,
well,
make it easy.
The difficulty for that is that you've got, I mean, if you live entirely in a Microsoft ecosystem, you can use Outlook with S/MIME. And that works really, really well if you're doing it at work, because you've got Active Directory doing all the certificate and identity management. And it happens kind of transparently, and it's really, really, really neat. Like, at big organizations that are Active Directory and Outlook, you can set up encrypted email internally. And it's actually pretty darn easy, assuming that you've already got the
infrastructure
there.
But there needs to be interoperability between all the big providers.
Yeah, but then as soon as you want to send an encrypted email to someone outside of the organization, it turns into this big giant mess, and they have to have a certificate, and blah, 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 blah. There's no, I mean, and the universal way around that, supposedly, is PGP and GPG, which are compatible basically with anything. S/MIME is not really all that openly compatible, but GPG and PGP are.
Yeah, PGP is, what is it, Pretty Good Privacy.
Pretty Good
so
Privacy.
It's just a public key cryptography package, and then GPG, I believe, is GNU Privacy Guard, which is just a free offering.
Right, because PGP is
got bought
like,
out for
yeah,
a while.
PGP
a
is kind
license.
Of like, at this point, it's kind of like saying Kleenex. It's the generic term for this. PGP is owned by Symantec right now, I think, and they sell it as an enterprise
around,
package.
Yeah.
So you can actually go as an enterprise and buy PGP from Symantec.
You used to be able to just buy it off the shelf, but not really anymore. It's hard to find.
Yeah, no, they licensed it out.
So basically, the things that we want people to do, like secure their information, whether it's through password and encryption or even just backing up their data, overall, it tends to be kind of a daunting and challenging task.
Really does.
Task, because even with, like, system backups, I mean, Apple's done a good job with their Time Machine.
Time Machine is good. It's saved my butt before, and I am the worst backup person ever.
But I've encountered people, you know, who have said, okay, I need a backup. So they get an external hard drive, and they make their backups, and then they come to find out later they haven't backed up what they thought they backed up, or they don't know how to restore once it happens, you know. Because
you always test your backup early, because, yeah, that's the
yeah,
you want to find out you don't have backups.
How to do that is tough, you know, but... You know, beyond the, like, what, so what happened with the person that wanted to encrypt their email?
I don't know. It's not my problem.
He's not taking her calls.
I'm not taking her calls.
It's too difficult an issue.
It's not my problem because, I mean, if I know who we're talking about. I know her, of course. And if I were to tell her what to do, I'd do exactly like Flick had said. I'd be like, well, what do you need to send? Check to see if your bank has some kind of secure Dropbox you can use, or do like Jay said and... you know, log into the bank's website and see if there's like a upload secure document, or, you know, like Laura said, Laura's attaching me again. She said, she told her to just fax it. Fax it.
That's awesome. There's even a secure fax.
Send it to the fax.
Stuff, yeah.
Well, I mean, okay. So for example, like sending information securely over the internet, I even know how good a practice this is, but one of the things that I've broken things down to is like when I book overseas travel, a lot of the hotels and B&Bs and stuff, they don't have secure websites to put in credit card information to be able to reserve your room.
Right.
And you have to, they want you to either fax them, which is a long distance, back in the day, well, even with a fax machine, it still can be.
It's still be tricky. It's hard finding a fax machine
a long distance call, or they ask you to email your credit card information. You say, well, okay, I don't really want to do that. And one of the things I've done to get around that kind of, and I don't even know how good it is because I can only imagine that there are algorithms that would figure it out, but is to take your credit card and break it into three emails, one with the first set of digits, the next one with the next set of digits, and the next one with the expiration date.
And then I send three more emails with numbers and say, XOR these against those.
Recently,
and then the third email goes.
I had to send a social security number, date of birth, and something, and they were just like, oh, yeah, send this to me in an email. I'm like, oh, I don't really want to do that in an email. So what I actually ended up doing was I created a Google Doc with that information and then shared it with that email address. And I said, send me an email when you've read it, and then I'll delete the Google Doc. So
that's now Google knows. And the
NSA now you just gave it all to the NSA.
There are some, actually, I used to use these
so
a little
bit.
So
that was temporarily. You know, it was available. I mean, anybody who got that email while the file was there could see that information, but at least it didn't make it so that now it's in that person's inbox forever.
There were some Windows executables that you could actually, you know, like point it, you'd run the thing, you'd point it at a file, and what it would do, it would create a software, like it would create a self-extracting file, like an exe file. You run it, it throws up a little window, you've got to put in the right password. So really then all you do is, you know, you'd open up your email, you'd, you know, double-click on the program, open up the file, and then the email say, hey, the password is... And then send the whole thing, and you're set. That's totally secure, right?
No, but to the, along those lines, I have taken documents and zipped them into a password.
Oh yeah, that's an easy
zip file,
yeah.
And then just give them the password over the phone.
Yeah, that, and I was just making a point on that.
Because the hackers have to monitor both streams.
That's the main thing. Don't send if you're. We always it's called like out of band kind of communication of passwords. Yeah, but you don't send like credentials. Like, you know, it would be like your username or the password or the server name. You try and break it up. So make a phone call. Send it via text message, but don't do it with emails, even back-to-back emails. Because if they got one email, they've got both of your emails.
Right.
You know?
It's tough. You know, we're going through a thing at work right now. The company that acquired us, they have their own set of security protocols in place.
Dumb rules.
What they do. And one of the things is that for connecting your mobile device to Exchange.
This
they
is going to make me angry, isn't it?
They enforce a... I don't know if it's going to make you angry. It might make you happy. They enforce a complex passcode.
Nope, makes me angry.
Really?
Why is that? You don't like passcodes on devices?
They're useless.
Because what happens with this policy, which is especially fun, is that they don't allow you to do the four-digit... Your four-digit PIN is not enough.
Mm-hmm.
They enforce a six-digit PIN... which requires uppercase, lowercase numbers, and two special characters or something.
Now, I get that, but I will say if you start to look, when you get really ridiculous.
People have been locking themselves out of their phones left and right because they can't remember their password.
This is even better than that rule is when they make that rule and then say, you have to change it every 30 days.
That's silly. Actually, there's a big camp saying password rotation is bad because it actually encourages bad habits. People start writing stuff down. They start reusing passwords and to change it by one letter. But the funny thing is when you start imposing all these rules on what a short password must contain, you're actually reducing the searchable key space that password could live in. So you're actually making it easier sometimes. Because I could say, like, hey, I'm going to write my brute forcer, and no matter what password I try, it's got to have at least one uppercase, one special character, one number. And you do that, you know that those are in there, and
like
it just gets a lot
smaller.
It's like
three orders of magnitude that
you don't have to search now. Yeah.
By.
So that can kind of shoot you in the foot, too. I prefer to say, do the password however, and we'll say
it's dumb. It's dumb for mobile devices. It's ludicrous for mobile devices because you don't need – all you need for proper mobile device security, if you're putting a password on your mobile device, is you need to have, one, a password that's at least a four-digit PIN. And two, you need to have it set so that you have remote wipe enabled.
That's
and
the
that
big
it
thing,
wipes
yeah.
the device if you do more than three incorrect passwords. And that's all you need to do. Then your password can be 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and you're fine.
They've only got a 1 in 3 chance of
getting it. And if they screw it up 3 times, then the device is wiped. If you're a responsible phone owner, you've got an encrypted backup.
Back it up to the corporate cloud or your home cloud or whatever.
I mean, if having to get your phone out and type, 3X, Q, lowercase, semicolon, open parenthesis, close parenthesis.
How do you know my password?
Yeah. it's just, all it does is just make your life difficult for no real gain.
And, kind of arbitrarily or unknowingly making security that burdensome makes people
not
turn
want
to off
do it.
To
agree
altogether. So it's kind of a two-edged sword there. All right, so we've gone off about security. I was looking over here at
your wife should have given her the number of the show. That's almost like we took a call without having to deal with the caller.
That's fine too.
That's fine. Say we've got a call coming in that we can just look at and ignore too.
I don't know what they're doing in the booth.
I don't know.
Afflicted's eating pizza.
You want
not
to
anymore.
See who that
no.
is calling, or do you know already? Or you don't care? Groovehouse.
They're gone.
Pick
they're
up
not
the phone
calling anymore.
While staring at Jay and hang back up again.
All right. So
remember when we used to be a call-in show?
Not really.
I guess your mom's here. It's been more this format. Than
not really, man.
You know, Dazzle. I got, unfortunately.
I got like one episode of like traditional call-in.
Uh-huh.
Everything else that every other time I've been a guest has either been like a fundraiser show, or it's been since I came on and we switched formats.
Hey, Lee.
It's weird how that worked out.
I've got spyware. Hey, Lee. my Google searches change every time I Google search.
Oh, man.
Hey, Lee, I've got spyware. That's kind of that's what you missed. That's,
hey, my modem, yeah. My modem interconnect is slow because I live in the country.
Hey, I found this computer.
Now we're getting personal. Wow. I got this computer out of a dumpster, and it won't boot or power up, and it smells like cat urine.
Might be a
what do I need to do to get Linux on it?
check the squirrel inside of it. Make sure there is not.
You didn't miss a whole lot, really, towards the end, I suppose.
You know.
You know,
I want to write my own disk encryption software.
But back in the day, when Steve Jobs called in and you gave him the idea for the original Macintosh, how cool was that?
Yeah, we've only had our 20th anniversary. We gave him the idea for the iPhone.
Nice. But,
nothing earlier.
So did you guys see
did
you guys see the trailer for the new Steve Jobs movie? The trailer hit today.
Is it Ashton Kutcher again?
I saw that there was a trailer. I didn't actually see the trailer.
It's not Ashton Kutcher. Good. It's Michael Fassbender.
I don't even think I know who that is.
As Steve
Jobs. I like
the
last name,
Is it Steve
though.
Jobs Genesis? Is that what we're talking
about? Yes. He's actually...
Jurassic Steve.
Oh, Fassbender, not Fassbender.
Fassbender plays the robot from Prometheus playing Steve Jobs.
German-Irish actor. I don't know if he looks. He looks like he's too action movie.
He looks
for Steve
very.
Jobs.
He doesn't look like Steve Jobs at all. But yeah, the trailer was very good. It was a good trailer. It looks actually a lot better than the Jobs
movie.
This is
like the Mad Max second movie, like Beyond Thunderdome, or Thunderdome.
Is this just where he goes and it's just like an hour and a half of him parking in handicapped spaces and
fighting,
degrading developers? Yeah,
sitting in an elevator, telling people that they're fired.
When I look at this guy, that's what I see him doing. I don't see him, you know.
Driving Mercedes.
This
very
is just
fast,
yeah. This is just
neglecting his daughter.
Yeah, a video of him being a jerk, not the like you know.
No, I don't know. Well, it's by either the screenplay was written by or had a lot of additions by Aaron Sorkin, so it should have at least some good dialogue.
I want someone to make a Wozniak movie before Woz dies.
You know who plays Woz in the new Steve Jobs movie?
Tell me, John H. Benjamin.
No, it's not. It's not H. John Benjamin. It's Oh man, I'm blanking. I'm blanking on the name. The guy from the 40-Year-Old Virgin who.
Oh, Carell?
Seth
Farland.
Seth Rogen. Seth Rogen plays Woz.
They should get Jack Black to play him.
Jack Black would make a better Woz. Watch Jack Black as Woz. Like get him a big old beard.
Yes.
Oh yes. Friends.
Can we like kickstart? This movie?
This script writes itself. Yeah,
I will quit my job tonight.
All right. So I was looking at the show prep. I know we're running out of time here in the first hour.
And we have to watch the second episode of Mr. Robot at 9. So.
Yeah, and we got to talk about that for at least 5 or 6 more minutes.
All right. So hopefully everybody did get out and see, you know, or got home and saw the first episode of Mr. Robot, which has been out there for.
We're not pimping this show. We just really like this show.
Are they putting?
I'm going to be curious to see what. I haven't seen episode 2 yet, which I guess is airing tonight.
Are they going
to
make it available online? Because that's the only way I can watch it.
It's a show about hackers. Someone's going to rip it within.
It's available online.
No, I mean legitimately. Oh. Like, is USA going to make
without
it available?
Without sailing the high seas.
Maybe.
It says you can see full episodes, but you've got to have a cable TV account to connect to.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
So I've got a cable TV. Just not
then you can't. Then you're not going to watch the episodes unless you pay for them on Vudu.
You'll have to watch them over Jay's shoulder.
Vudu or Hulu?
Vudu has them where you can buy the whole season pass.
What is Vudu?
I don't think I've used Vudu. I've seen Vudu, but I never gave it any credit. I didn't think it was
Vudu's
a big player.
It's a pay. It's like Redbox on the internet.
It's a movie rental service.
Movie rental service.
So is that better than watchmenow.real.tv.ru?
Well, it's legal.
So what you're saying is it's another fragmentary video rental service designed to divorce us from principles of ownership and destroy the market so that it's impossible to use media and consume it in a way that you're comfortable with, and instead you have to do only what they tell you in the format they tell you to do it and the player they tell you to do it in.
So leftist in here.
All right, you libtards. All right, so...
Information wants to be free, man.
So do my photos.
Careful now.
All right, so do we want to do something off the other news list here before we go into the top of the hour break?
A quick bite of the apple?
Okay, quick. Let's see if I can actually do this correctly this time. Because
don't make me scared again.
We need a new bite of the apple.
It is kind of dark and stormy out, because this is...
Bite of the apple.
Pete, is that a Foley sound effect, or did you actually get like a chip and record that?
I Googled Apple Byte sound.
Right. I think we should do like we could
set up a podcasting mic in your kitchen and like into it.
No. I knew that kind of sound would be something that someone had made a good recording of, and I, 100% honest, it was royalty free, available for anybody to use sound.
But it was actually celery, and it wasn't an apple.
Bite of the
It sounded like an onion.
But it had the right sound. There were like three different sounds. The thing that is amazing when you're trying to make a recording like that is you Google it, and then how many different ways you can make the sound of biting an apple. You would be surprised, all the subtleties, all the different ones, and that was the one that sounded the best to me, so I used it.
Mm-hmm. We should get the count from Sesame Street.
You wanted to know.
Can we get the count from Sesame
Street?
Can we
let him do the segment before we run out of time?
Okay. So we'll keep it quick. Now that Apple Worldwide Developers Conference is over, now it's time for iPhone rumor time until sometime this fall. There was a report yesterday that the next generation iPhone 6S will look essentially identical to the current lineup of iPhones with a few minor internal differences.
How will people know I have the new iPhone?
Gotta get a flashy case.
No, because of the smug look you'll have when you download files, because apparently it's going to have an updated Qualcomm LTE chip offering faster speeds and greater energy efficiency. So, specifically, the next iPhone will carry the 9X35 Gobi modem platform, which should give a significant increase in performance over the current one used in the 6 and the 6 Plus. For everyday users, it gives the potential for significant increases in LTE performance with download speeds of up to 300 megabits per second, which is twice what you can get with the current line. Obviously, the real-world limitations of your carrier will limit those improvements, but you have the opportunity with the new chip. It's also more power efficient, so it should give you some improvement in battery life as you're doing online stuff. The rumors say that there could be a number of enhancements for the device, from the faster LTE modem to a force touch display, and perhaps the biggest camera jump ever. So we'll keep a track on those rumors. A quick update for if you've got AppleCare and you've got, say, an iOS device, Apple has made their policy more clear. If you own the device and it's covered, one of their devices, and it's covered by Apple Care Plus, once it drops below 80% of its original capacity, they will replace it. So that's worthwhile if you have Apple Care. And finally, the latest OS X update that's coming out will allow you to enable trim for third-party solid-state drives. If you've got an old iMac you want to put an SSD in, this new one will let you use any of them. You don't have to use the special ones that only apply.
There's some caveats. We can get into that after the break.
All right. Yeah. Well, interesting news. We want some things to chew on when we come back after this break. We got to take care of some station business, so we're going to take care of that station business. You are listening to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Lynn.
And he's
Groovehouse.
Did you know? know you can find KPFT on the social networking sites Twitter and Facebook? You certainly can, and we'd love you to add us as a friend and get us connected with friends of yours. Join our fan page and check out a special video message from General Manager Dwayne Bradley, as well as keep up with KPFT programmers and staff. Visit facebook.com/KPFT Houston to join us. To follow us, visit twitter.com/KPFT. With both, you can link up with other KPFT listeners, get the latest news about the station, and find lots of extras. It's fun, so catch up with KPFT online. Again, on Twitter, visit twitter.com/KPFT. On Facebook, visit us at facebook.com/KPFT Houston. This is commercial-free, listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio, 90.1 KPFT Houston.
El patrocinio de Radio Escuchas es una respuesta práctica al problema de obtener y mantener mejores programas de radio. Un enfoque a anunciantes o a las audiencias masivas considera mediocridad de la radio comercial. Con esta mediocridad, el mejoramiento de la radio es una utopía. Cuando los radioescuchas apoyan la radio que ellos disfrutan, sus opciones son mejores. El patrocinio de radioescuchas les permite tomar el control de su radio, de las manos de compañías y las pone en manos de la comunidad. Pero mantener este tipo de radio requiere de usted. Su donación es nuestro apoyo para mantener KPFT en el aire como un recurso vital de la comunidad. Así que visite la página de internet www.kpft.org para convertirse en un miembro el día de hoy. Su donación es esencial para mantener viable el patrocinio de Radio Escuchas para las generaciones por venir. Esta es libre de comerciales, patrocinada por Radio Escuchas. Radio Pacífica, KPFT, Houston.
You're listening to 90.1 FM, KPFT, Houston. We now return you to Mr. Robot.
Domo arigato.
Domo.
All right, so you are going to talk to us about trim. So what is trim?
Careful now.
Phrasing.
Oh, you beat me.
Oh, by the way, we should let our listeners know that Barrett has just discovered Archer.
Phrasing.
I've had it on the background, yeah, the past couple, a little bit of coding. So that's been pretty awesome. Show. I started watching on the way back home a little bit. On the flight, so it's pretty awesome.
I highly recommend watching every bit of it.
I'm a big H. John Benjamin, is that the order? Fan of his since, yeah, Home Movies, so it's mm-hmm. it's pretty awesome. Well, and pretty much all the other voice actors on the show are awesome.
I'm very excited going to San Diego Comic-Con next week, and I'm going to get to go to the press event for Archer, which has all the voice actors going
I'm
to be
envious.
There.
You must bring back pictures.
You must bring back John H. John Benjamin.
I'm going to bring back pictures, but what I'm hoping against hope is that I can get a recording of H. John Benjamin saying you're listening to Technology Vice.
Oh, yes. The best.
Yes.
Barrett, like, clutched his hands.
Yes.
It would be awesome if I could so get awesome. Something like that. Back in the olden days of radio, it used to be a coup to get musicians to do promos.
Oh, yeah, you're listening to blah, blah, blah on the Jay and Peter show in the morning.
I had one that was, this is Adrian Ballou, and you're listening to Wake Up and Smell the Coffee, blah, blah, blah. It was always cool to be able to get those, and I don't know how they feel.
Do we need to send you with, like, a mic in gear? What do we need to do to get you
I wonder
to
if I could
this?
Do it with an iPhone.
Yeah, you can.
I think I could do
with the quality, maybe test it out before, see what the quality's like, but I would scare up a mic just for that.
And we probably should figure out if we can come up with short things for any of the rest of them that you could, that if you happen
just
to
step out
can't
of the press
get H. John
line,
Benjamin.
Be like, hey, by the way, can you just say all this stuff here? Yeah.
I can make you a list. Most of them might have my name in it, but I can totally get you a script.
No, but if there's a moment to where you're talking to someone and say, hey, you know, I do a radio show at Houston. Would you be willing? We're public radio. Would you be willing to do a promo for us? That's the way we used to.
Yeah, we've been
it.
On for 20 years. We're blah, blah, blah. Big fans.
Something like that. So what's a good voice recording app for the iPhone?
I use one called Voice Memos, but I think there's a built-in app you can use.
Really? Like Record?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's something. Called like Memo or...
Well, could you wonder if he would mind you getting a video, because the video we could pull the audio off, and then we'd also have the video of him doing it.
That's
which would be kind of cool. Yeah, just set it up to high res and record at the highest HD you can on your phone.
I'll figure it out.
Awesome.
I'll
figure it out.
All right, so trim.
This is trim in the context of solid-state discs, not trim in any other context. Okay, so trim is a command. It's an ATA command, and when you see it written, it's always in all caps, not because it's an initialism or an acronym, but because it is
important.
It's an ATA command, and ATA commands by the spec are all capitalized. So trim is a command that newer operating systems can send along with deletion commands when they delete a file, so that the solid-state disk knows to mark pages as stale when files are deleted. Because otherwise, a solid-state disk, without taking up too much time, an SSD, there's kind of a divorce between the operating system's concepts of where files are in the file system and where the blocks that actually make up those files are stored on the solid-state disk. So when you delete a file, like when in macOS or in Windows, when you drag a file to the trash can and delete it, the file isn't actually deleted. Depending upon the file system, there's an operation that gets done. Usually the first character of the file gets changed to some delete me character, and there are the file system updates the master file table and the journal. But like, there's no like, you know, if it's like a 5 meg file, the drive doesn't go in and like scrub 5 megabytes out. It just marks that space as deleted. And it does it by appending data to the drive. Well, from the solid-state disk's perspective, from any disk's perspective, that's just more write operations that occur. So trim is sort of the way around this. Trim is a command that the operating system can send when it deletes the files. It'll also kind of shove this command down the ATA bus to the drive and say, hey, by the way, I just deleted these files. You should like take them. There corresponds to these sectors, and you should mark them as stale in your little lookup table. So it helps keep your solid state disk performing faster for longer, because It helps keep your solid state disk performing faster longer, because actually deleting data on an SSD, when a drive actually does delete data in pages and blocks, it's a very complicated operation. So Apple, until this update, only allowed trim to work on first-party solid-state disks. So if you bought your Mac with an SSD in it from Apple, trim was enabled. If you bought like an iMac or a Mac Mini and stuck an SSD into it, and like a third-party one, put it in yourself, you couldn't enable trim without going in and doing some funky stuff.
Yeah, there were some hacks you could do to get it to work.
There were some hacks you could do to get it to work, but there wasn't officially supported. So now they've included a little command line utility that lets you enable trim by typing. It's called TrimForce, and it lets you turn trim on, basically, from the command line. But there is a caveat. You shouldn't just go and do this. You should only do it if you have a solid-state disk that is not on one of the Linux trim blacklists, because some drives, particularly those with SandForce controllers, a couple of Crucial drives, and I think the new Samsung 840, or not new, but the recent Samsung 840 series, not the Pro, but the regular, don't react well with trim, and they can randomly corrupt data in addition to deleting it. Like, it'll delete what you want to delete, and then other blocks can get corrupted. There is a list, I don't know what the URL is, but if you look and if you go Google for drives that don't work with trim or SSDs that don't work with trim, if you've got a Mac that you've put a third-party SSD into and it happens to be one of these, leave trim disabled. Don't turn it on. You could be if you do enable it with a disk that's on that list, you could wind up with weird corruption that you won't really be able to notice, because data corruption, it's like sector-by-sector data corruption, is insidious. You don't really notice it. It's not like, you know, one sector gets corrupted and your computer, like, you know, throws up the sad Mac face and won't boot anymore. It's just like weird stuff starts going wrong. So if you have a drive that's on that list, don't enable trim for it. Leave trim disabled. If you have a Mac that you bought from the store and it came with an SSD in it already, you don't have to worry about this. Not your problem. If you're running Windows, not your problem. And if you're running Linux, then you already know all of this, and so also not your problem. That was sort of the trim explanation.
Plan 9 users? Yes. Any concerns?
No, if you know what that is, you are on your own. Reach a certain level of knowledge where, like, you've made your bed and you're sleeping it yourself. I can't tell you.
You
what
will have
to
no SSD.
Mr. Running BIOS.
Oh.
If you're an Amiga user.
And the other piece, just to make sure it's sort of crystal clear, because I kind of glossed it when we were running out of time. You want to have, if you already understand all the things Lee said, you want to make sure that you have today's OS 10.10.4 update.
Correct.
Because that's the one that has it. Before that, you have to get a third-party tool maybe to work. So, there are certainly caveats. 10.4,
good buddy.
To this one, yeah. I think issues? Rumors are that the next version, the next full version of the operating system, will have it'll be a lot more clear on what it'll work with for third party, or where you won't have quite as many, you won't have as many caveats that you have to pay attention to.
And that's the other. Jay just mentioned something too. There is another big update. That update to 10.10.4, the latest Yosemite update. Change if you've got a Mac and you've been having weird Wi-Fi issues or weird networking issues, and you haven't run this update, run the update, because they changed they changed some stuff around with how Macs do DNS. They ripped out kind of a custom DNS thing that they had written and put back in the old non-custom one that worked fine. And people who had been having Wi-Fi issues are reporting all of a sudden that those issues are going away. So if you're having funky networking issues with your Mac, try installing the latest update that came out yesterday, because they may vanish as if by magic.
Mm-hmm. In the world of technology, new things come out every day. Our judges will decide whether to try, buy, or fry.
Okay.
Take it away, Judge Judy.
Wapner.
Got a couple things tonight. One that fits in very well with the sort of encryption, privacy, VPN thing. But first, there's kind of a growing thing about like everyday carry, what you carry in your pocket and what kind of tools you have around. And a lot of the times it ends up being kind of clunky, like carrying a Leatherman or something like this. There's one that is a Kickstarter that's kind of cool, that sort of stuck out to me as a different one. It's called the Titanium Pocket Bit. And what it is it's a screwdriver. If you've ever had like the screwdriver that has sort of a socket in it, and you put like the Phillips tip or the slotted screwdriver tip in it, it looks like those tips, except they're on a ring. And so what you do, so it's a little, like half inch long titanium pocket bit. So it only weighs 4 grams, and you use the ring to twist it. So if you imagine there's a hole in the middle of this bit, and one side is Phillips head and one side is slotted, and then you have the ring. And so you put the bit into a screw that you want to turn, and then twist the ring, and you have a screwdriver in your pocket, without it taking up basically any more space or weight than having another key.
This is kind of brilliant.
Yeah, I'm actually digging this one.
And it's $10. And it's $10. It's one of those where, because if you look at the everyday carry stuff, and there's a site called everydaycarry.com that has all kinds of cool things about what people carry. Some people lug around tons of stuff, and just in their pockets, just emptying their pockets has a ton. And some things are useful and some things are not. And this one seems like a useful add-on. It's a clever thing that would actually work. It's why I thought to highlight. And it's $10 to pre-order from Kickstarter, so that's not bad for a cool titanium pocket bit. So it sounds like the consensus would be try on that one or buy even, right?
Well, I guess you have to buy it to try it. For that price, it looks like a
That's kind of a because you look at some of these other ones like a Leatherman or something like that, and the price goes pretty high pretty fast.
Well,
and
the weight does too.
Pretty large. The weight and size gets pretty large in your pockets. So, and then there's some of them that have just sort of weird key things that I've found don't work. Don't look like they would work well. I did get one of those, what is it, the Night Eyes, it's called, N-I-T-E-I-Z-E. I got one of them that has a ruler, a bottle opener, and a box opener on it. Huh. It's like $5 that goes on your keychain. It's got like a carabiner on it. And it also has a little, like for small nuts, it has, you know, on a screw, it has a kind of cutout in the middle, like a lot like, you know, there's those Pocket Ninja or Pocket Monkey tool card things. So it's got that. But the thing I use the most is basically the bottle opener and the box opener part. You know, instead of taking and using a key to open a package from Amazon or whatever with the security tape, I like using a thing that's, you know, $4 that I'm not going to have to worry about, you know, wrecking my key. So there's that. And so there's the everyday carry thing. And then this one, the online anonymity box.
Okay, now I automatically don't trust anything like this.
Yeah, I already have an opinion on this.
You can go find out more about it. You can go find out more about it at DEF CON next month when Ben Caudill, who came up with it, unveils ProxyHam, a, quote, hardware proxy designed to use a radio connection to add a physical layer of obfuscation to an internet user's location. It's an open source device, which he built for $200, connects to Wi-Fi and relays a user's internet connection over a 900 megahertz radio connection to their faraway computer with a range of between 1 and 2.5 miles, depending on interference from landscape and buildings. That means even if investigators fully traced the user's internet connection, they'll only find the ProxyHam box that the person planted in a remote library, cafe, or other public place and not their actual location.
So, Barrett, you're kind of a radio kind of guy.
There are two issues here.
What does 900 megahertz do to your bandwidth?
Oh, this isn't going to be like a high bandwidth connection. It's going to be like more of a command control, get some commands out, you know, hide where you're doing it from. You know, I think that people trading files have better ways to do it. The other two issues here, and again, there's a photo on the front, which might be a little bit misleading, but this is going to be a directional point-to-point connection for the most part. You're not going to radiate out everything 1.2 miles all the way around. So what's going to happen is the investigator is going to show up, and let's just say you're doing something bad enough to where you've got like the ire of the FCC, or you've got the ire of some NGO or some GO or somebody doesn't like what you're doing. So the thing is, if they can't just even look at the antenna orientation and kind of tell where you're coming from anyway and just follow that line, it's very, very easy. And this is going to be at DEF CON 2. People are building it. It's called Fox Hunters. And this is kind of coming over from the old ham stuff. And what it is, it's a signal tracer based on the Doppler effect. So, like, if, you know, if you spin, like, say, like you had, like, four antennas and you spun them around at, like, 30,000 RPM, you could actually measure the difference in timing of those radio waves hitting each of the antennas. But since you can't possibly spin anything that fast, you can do it electronically. So you can get four antennas, you can take measurements from all four of them very, very quickly, and then on short order for like $200 or $300, you can build a little circuit that will say, hey, the signal's coming from this direction or that direction, and you just trace it down. So this might buy you a little bit more time, but this, if, you know, in the true big, you know, hacker toolkit of, you know, hiding your location, this is not the way to do it.
It seems like these homebrew kind of solutions just don't really ever hold up in the real world, right? I mean, there's that classic XKCD cartoon about
my password's like, so strong they'll never ever break it.
There's like the in the geek's mind, here's what they think would happen, and it's like a guy tied to a chair and two guys are
we're giving
there.
Up. This is triple AES. We can't possibly break
we can't
it.
Break
it's too strong
his,
for
we
us.
Can't break into his laptop. Oh, the encryption is too strong. And then like and then it shows the next panel is what happens in real life, and it's like, well, can't break into his laptop, so you hold his ankles and I'll break his legs and see if he gives the password.
A little wrench to the kneecaps. I want my passwords to break before my legs do. That's my password.
It's called rubber hose cryptography.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, or we called it baseball bat decryption. Yeah.
Yes.
So this product just fits in that middle ground where if someone's coming after you trying to pinpoint your location based on, you know, geolocation of your IP address, they probably also have the resources to do a little bit of fox hunting and figure out where a wireless signal is coming from.
Yeah,
that's the point.
It's like, and then flip that question around. You know, if you need this, if you're in a position where you feel like you need to obfuscate your location, like to this much of a degree, how much trouble are you probably in? You know, it's probably a fair amount, right?
I would just say go be all chummy with Snowden in Russia and wait it out there. Don't go buy this $200 piece of box.
I'd say pretty much if anybody...
You can build it yourself, too.
If anybody's posted the, you know, the truth on YouTube about Jade Helm, the government could be after him.
Oh, don't go
at this level.
Mm. If you say it on the air.
Now, you could do with something like this, you could do like some short burst stuff and just, you know, like do some weird, like if you got a very large, like a slice of bandwidth to where you could broadcast from like HF stuff, which would be illegal because it's, you know, ham bands all the way up. And you did short bursts all over the spectrum and did some spread spectrum stuff and did some encryption on top of that. It might make it harder for someone to find you, but it's not going to, it's just going to slow them down a little bit.
What if we wired Barrett's laptop to the KPFT antenna and use that to remote control our computers? Would that work?
I think that's, I've already got a Bluetooth link. Oh, no, that's not what that icon means. Okay. I thought we were doing that already, but no, apparently.
We're not quite that cool. We're not going to hack the Gibson that way.
Yeah, I must say that this week there weren't a lot of new things.
Oh, can we jump one more time? Can we just dog the box one more time? So this device was used in a movie starring Christian Slater. Can anyone remember this? Do you remember the scene?
No, I'm already.
So
just
yeah, pump up the volume.
Christian Slater.
He's doing something. They go over to, you know, they trace the phone call. They go to the neighbor's house, and he has a cordless phone that he's using a couple houses over, and that's how he's getting the signal out, and that's how he's making the call. So this is a straight ripoff from 1991's Pump Up the Volume, starring Christian Slater.
Womp, womp. Speaking of Christian Slater, you've got a treat coming your way in Archer.
Oh, is he in there? Is he in Archer?
Oh,
I hope I've got a treat coming tonight, because he's also on Mr. Robot.
Well, yeah, but you got a treat coming in Archer.
Okay.
Do you have the ability to watch Mr. Robot?
Jay is going to basically.
What was
live
Jay asking again?
The episode.
What?
You going to live tweet the episode, Jay?
Yeah.
What's happening right now? So, the live tweeting is.
I guess you would not be live tweeting it.
Awkward
then.
Nerd moment. Awkward hacking. There's hacking happening. Oh, my God. Difficult interaction with other people.
Default to uncomfortable laughter. Run uncomfortable laughter subroutine.
Bash shell. Gratuitous bash shell.
No, I'm not going to do that.
Escape.
All right. So what are we going to do next, Pete?
Warning.
We're coming to.
Warning. Can I buy? Is this titanium? This Wait, titanium pocket bit thing. Can you buy these? This looks awesome.
You can get in line for the Kickstarter.
Oh,
it's still open for like 28 more days, which means
my eyes and read it.
You get to get it, and then you get to completely forget about it, and hopefully they build them and ship them, and then eventually.
Oh, this doesn't bode well. So I'm looking at this. We're back at the pocket bit. I'm looking at its Kickstarter page. It has a goal of $2,500, and they've pledged $24,000. So
going over is almost worse than coming up shy.
Yeah,
because a lot of times they're not.
Their goal.
Yeah, they're not ready for that kind of production. Although I would hope that they could just send these out and just have them. Because it's one piece, single piece machining. Hopefully, it wouldn't be that hard to pull off, but you never know.
You would think.
They actually talk about that at the very bottom in their possible complications.
We sold too many.
That's actually what they said, because they've done 11 or 16. They said 11 or 16 other.
Ah, yes.
Projects,
here it says,
so.
If the project is extremely overfunded, mm-hmm. that could delay the overshipping of the rewards. But we have already factored in some extra lead time into our current delivery estimates.
By a factor
and
of 10.
We only have one Russian MiG to melt down. Get them while you can.
Source of titanium limited.
Well,
they're going to be buying extra DEFCON 21 badges.
Remember DEFCON 21? Was it 21?
Was it 20?
Yeah, 21 had a ton of them. Or 20.
20, it was the titanium badges.
No.
21. It was the Pharaoh ones.
It was 19.
You're right.
Online.
It was 19.
Wow.
It was 19.
Because 20 was the one with the Egyptian stuff.
Yes, with the electronic badge. But anyway, they in the store, DEF CON, to catch our readers up, our listeners up, they give badges, or they sell. You get a badge.
Like a convention if you go to a trade show or
but
a convention.
But that's your pass. That allows you to get into all the talks and the various rooms.
Do you need the badges?
Yes.
We need the stinking badges. And so the first year I went was DEF CON 19, and the badges were made out of pure titanium. And the badges are also part of a puzzle.
Treated with some other weird, funky materials that'll age and change colors over the years and
but
all this weird stuff.
But titanium's actually, it's strong, but it reacts funky with so many things.
But they also, they mentioned when they did the talk about the badges that year, that when they decided to do that with the badges, they actually depleted or got a hold of all of the titanium that was available from whatever one of the places.
It was there was a shortage on titanium. because they bought so much of it to make the badges for DEF CON.
Apparently, there's just not that much titanium in the world. So your comment about melting down.
No, it's kind of accurate. Yeah.
So yeah, they so if you turn in your DEF CON 19 badge, you can probably get one for one of these bits for free.
3 bits per badge is the exchange rate right now.
Well, yeah, I've heard that famously, this year's DEF CON badges are made out of depleted uranium that they got from Iraq.
I don't know if I would want to wear that.
We will light up the night
and,
with our hats.
And as you age and wear the badge, you change colors, and there's all kinds of cool stuff with that.
That's not good.
There's no hardware badge this year, right? It's just going to be a regular, boring
what?
Old badge.
I don't know. I mean, they
oh,
I
isn't,
think
it, isn't it pendulum-ing? They skip a year, it
they've
seems
they've gone
like.
Back and forth
yeah.
the last few years. That doesn't necessarily mean, but
don't they
maybe.
Just inject you with an RFID tag? And
in like, your sleep, and that's not really public, man.
But then once
Dark
you get it the one
is
time,
not happy about us.
You can keep going back and
you
like
you get your badge uploaded as malware to your phone from one of the free charging stations.
Oh my god, that kind of scares me. Like I'm not going this year. We're not. I don't think we're going to send anybody. But like that, you hear like these freaky horror stories about like if you go to DEF CON, take the batteries out of every device you own, even like your pacemaker and your hearing aids, because people will hack all.
I will hack your hearing aid.
It's pretty funny hearing people talk about it, but at the same time, yeah, there are things going on sometimes that are.
You get caught wrong.
For grins, you know, pull up your Wi-Fi on your device and look at all the hotspots.
Connect to the one that says,
don't
like,
connect to anything, but just look at the names of them.
Free internet here.
And, of course, the ever-popular Wall of Sheep where they publish.
Yes.
They don't actually give that full email address.
They stopped doing that, which is nice, and full passwords.
Yeah, but they would say, you could tell, like, if it was your email address that they had your password.
But the
anybody
the
sending stuff
is,
over plain text.
They'll capture it, yeah.
But the problem is, If you turn on your Wi-Fi, your Wi-Fi is going to start broadcasting all the SSIDs that it knows.
Unless you have that turned off and disabled.
Just saying
should,
like,
yeah.
Hey, is my home network out there? And then somebody's going to have a pineapple
yeah,
or something
yeah.
and go.
Freshly bought yeah, pineapple probably, yeah.
Yeah, I'm your home network. And then your system will go, okay, well, here's my username and password.
Yeah, you think you're fairly safe, and then you go to the there's like a vendor area where they're selling like all the hardware exploits. And like, okay, I don't feel quite as good. Then you go to a few talks where they're like, they actually hand out tools, and there's 0 days. Like, no one really knows except for the people giving the talks that these tools are out there. And then you get the tools, and they're like, oh, that actually works. Then you start to be like, okay, maybe I won't turn on Wi-Fi, or maybe
no,
I won't do this.
Turn Wi-Fi off. Don't.
Definitely turn Wi-Fi off.
Turn Wi-Fi
turn
off.
Bluetooth off.
Bluetooth off.
You can relatively safely use cellular broadband, but they did have yeah. that mobile station.
There are some femtocells wandering around.
That femtocell hack, that was the first, because I wasn't concerned about leaving my phone on. And that femtocell hack presentation, that was the first one I was like, oh, that's kind of scary. Fortunately, at the time, I think it was T-Mobile, but at the time I wasn't on T-Mobile. And so, but they said, you know, if you come into this presentation, you might want to turn your phone off, especially if you use whatever carrier it was. And it was pretty crazy because, yeah, you go in and you're sitting there and they just put up a big screen of, like, you know, a terminal window. And they're like, all right, well, here's this femtocell. We just bought this burner phone. This is its phone number. So why don't y'all send it some text messages?
Mm-hmm.
And then they said, okay, so this is the femtocell we broke into. So this associated with this femtocell. And these text messages just started scrolling across the screen that people were sending to that phone number. I'm like, well, that's kind of crazy.
Yeah, a few years ago there was an iPhone 0 day out that yeah. was floating around. I mean, there's always stuff out. So I would not bring stuff. Ooh, or bring stuff, you know, just bring clean devices, bring stuff, you know, take all the personal data off it and just, you know, throw it out there to see what happens. But that's, you know, that's if you enjoy running through minefields,
you know,
you might enjoy doing that.
The thing about going to DEF CON is that, you know, I'm less worried about my phone and my laptop than I am about maybe using an ATM machine.
Yeah, don't yeah. use...
So you have a conveniently located ATM machine right next to the line.
The fact that the hotel that's hosting all the hackers also has my credit card on file somewhere in their system.
Yes. Yeah. How do they find a hotel to host them? Or is there kind of like a like an unwritten don't hack the hotel because they're nice enough to host us.
There was a transition when they kept getting kicked out of hotel after hotel after hotel to where when they had enough critical mass, enough money coming in to where they could find like the older hotels that were kind of, on the dying kind of thing. Like, and I hate to say that, like the Riv was dying or Rio was dying, but they've definitely seen better days. There was enough DEF CON money there for them to come in, for them to say like, okay, we will put up with all the antics, with all the elevator stuff, with the fake ATMs, with everything to get that revenue, because really hackers drink. That's the main thing. The bars are packed. Their bar sales are through the roof. Hackers, I'm assuming they gamble too. Now, whether or not they take money from the house, who knows? They eat. They do a lot of stuff, so it's a big revenue thing. And the only reason we've moved the last few times, instead of getting kicked out, we've just pure outgrown it. There have been times when you couldn't get by in a hallway, and need more room.
I'm just, the ultimate hack for DEF CON hasn't happened yet, and it's going to be the Ocean's 11. It's going to be the Ocean's 11 maneuver on the registration money, because it's all cash.
Yeah,
it's 100 and some odd dollars per person, and there's 60,000.
200 now, 230 this year.
60,000 people show up. That's all cash transactions. So there are just bags and bags of money handled by hackers. Not like by, I don't know, I guess, maybe they make a deal with hotel security.
They probably, so I'm assuming because it's very secure in there, I would assume that they would have, maybe the hotel security would come by with the lock boxes and clear the money out every once in a while. But surely Dark Tangent doesn't walk out, with like a backpack full of,
Just walks out with this, two briefcases full of hundreds.
Times, let's say 25,000 people show up this year. That's, whoa.
You hadn't thought about that?
No, that's five. That's a $5.75 million. That'd take two backpacks, I'm assuming.
No, it's a very lucrative deal, yeah. So it allows them, obviously.
Well, they buy badges. They do a lot of stuff. I'm assuming it's expensive to put on.
They do spend some of that money on things, which is nice, but that's still a fairly lucrative thing that was born out of a drunken party of hackers,
I really think the goons should have jetpacks if they're bringing in this much money.
They should at least get those. Have you seen those Aqua jet packs?
Oh, yeah. You plug into the compressor, the pump, and you can fly above the water.
You plug it into a jet ski, and you stand on top of this thing, and it shoots you in the air. They should do that in the pool. There should be somebody should demo one of those. At any rate. All right. So that's enough about that.
Okay.
Yeah, it's actually not too late to go.
$100 bill weighs approximately 1 gram. So what would you say? $5.75
Is that more or less than the human soul?
I was trying to figure this out. So $5.75 million is $57,500 bill, or $57,500 $100 bills. So that's 57,500.
Can we do this in pounds and ounces? This metric stuff is way too easy.
575 kg in pounds. That's 1,267 pounds worth of $100 bills for all of the DEF CON entry fees.
How much would that be in pounds sterling?
Well, and it's not all being paid for in $100 bills either.
No, yeah.
It's like sweaty
pocket change.
20s.
The folded up sticky 20s. Here.
Well, my wife, she's happy not to go to DEF CON, and she keys in on the one thing that I made the mistake of sharing with her, which was the DEF CON fact that talked about personal hygiene, where the FAQ for DEF CON talked about, this may not be something you're accustomed to, but bathing.
The 1-2-3 rule.
They did do that, and they put it on the hotel key cards last time.
What's the 1-2-3 rule?
It's one bath.
One bath.
Two meals. 3 hours of sleep.
3 hours of sleep.
Every day,
yeah.
Some people ignore that. I've ignored the sleep thing. A lot of people ignore some people show up with a bath deficit. So they hit the ground, not all that great. Some and then people, they go out in the 100-degree weather outside the hotel and walk around, and they come in, and it's just...
Some people also take substances to avoid the 3 hours of sleep.
Yeah, I did get
that.
That
doesn't bother me. What bothers me is the no bathing thing. Come on, man. Ew.
It eventually just kind of congeals, and you can't really tell where it's coming from. It's just, and there are some worse offenders than most, but, come Sunday evening, it's just kind of, it just smells
hackery. It's not necessarily too bad unless they don't change clothes also.
The villages, like the hardware hacker village gets a little whiffy from time to time. I didn't say that. I'm sorry. So DEF CON, just super short, is it's the U.S.'s largest hacking convention. It's been going on. This is its 22nd year.
Is the NSA speaking this year?
Yeah, there might be someone from there. Probably not. They've been on the fallout since Keith Alexander came and lied about everything. So who knows? But yeah, it's cash only registration. There's no pre-registration. There are hotel blocks, I believe, at like Bally's, Caesars, Paris. You can go to DEFCON, DEFCON.org, and get information. But yeah, you just kind of show up, and there are talks, there are contests, there are workshops, and you can do none of that. You can do, you know, it's kind of what you make of it. But it's definitely something, if you've been wanting to go and you've always heard of it, just do it.
This is 23, right?
23, yeah. Oops.
Yeah, I think he said 22.
Yeah, I think I did. It was DEF CON 22 last year.
Yeah.
This year it looks kind of like a comic, kind of 1930s, kind of Pulp Fiction kind of feel to it. Have you seen the artwork?
Have there any
been the fonts?
No, I haven't. Have there been any badge leaks or anything?
I haven't looked. But it's getting to be that time. I know a lot of the party registrations have already closed. They went early this year.
Wow.
Yeah. So if you want to go get on the party list and start requesting invites.
You know, I the first one I went to was 19. Even though I'd wanted to go for years, I just was nervous about, you know, going somewhere that I wasn't sure how that would go. So, yeah, I missed like the Sands and anything before then. So this will be the first location shift for me.
Oh, you've been at it's always been
at
the Rio.
At the Rio, yeah, the entire time. So,
are they not at the they're not the Rio anymore?
No,
they're moving. It got too crowded.
It got too crowded, and so now they're splitting across multiple locations
between Paris.
So it's Paris and Bally's.
That's where like the vendor areas and the talks and the sky talks and the parties will be. But then they've also got DEF CON room blocks at like Caesars and a handful of other hotels as well. There's probably like six or seven different hotels you can stay at.
I know there's multiple hotels you can stay at, but I thought all the convention was taking place in Paris and Bally's.
Oh yeah, that's what I'm saying. So all the convention stuff takes place there, but there are blocks
of rooms you can get
like the DEF CON gear and get the DEF CON rate.
But the
thing
is, you know, Rio's
kind of hike it over.
Rio's kind of off on the whatever.
There's no nearby hotels.
You know, you can go a quarter mile and get to the Palms or whatever. We walked that a few times, but
it's a long, hot hike.
It's complicated
most on the strip.
Cab ride too to ride over to the Rio.
On Rio, yeah, is that to get to most of the rest, you have to go across that highway.
Yeah.
And there's like that one thing, and they didn't make any pedestrian walkway. Nope. So,
I'm looking forward to going to DEF CON and having easy access to the strip.
This will be cool again because one of the reasons they chose, you know, when Dark Tangent is the guy, and help me out with his real name, blah, blah, blah. I knew this a second ago. Jeffrey Moss. Anyway, he's the guy that kind of, you know, orchestrated the whole thing. And when asked, like, hey, why do you choose Vegas? He's like, well, you know, most of the stuff we do, we go late at night. You know, we wander around, we get in your phones, we do all this stuff. So he was thinking, like, you know, where in the world, where in the U.S. can you go where no one's going to look at you funny if you're up at 2 or 3 in the morning running around the hotel or doing whatever? And the answer to that is Vegas.
Vegas.
So the cool part is that there used to be a lot more interaction. Not so much interaction, but the hackers used to be mixing in along the non-hackers quite a bit more. But since we've been off the strip and away from that, you'll see people with badges out in other casinos, but it's more of a rarity. Now, I think what you're going to see is it's just going to kind of infect the strip for the week, and it's going to be a little bit more fun. And it's going to be a little bit more noticed. So
yeah,
we'll see what happens.
I'm curious about the culture shift in general, just what it's going to be like.
And so much new blood,
too. First of all, to go to two hotels instead of one, it seems kind of crazy. But I wasn't there for the shift from, you know, to the Rio, which was a lot much bigger space than before either. So it'll be the first like shift for me that I think will be interesting.
Good. All new bars, all new hangout spots. I was just getting where I wouldn't get lost walking through the casino, you know, even after a drink or two. It was nice.
I think the ultimate social hack for this upcoming DEF CON is convince thousands of people to go to the part of Vegas that they're redoing downtown, the Zappos people are doing. Convince them that there's some big secret serious deal down there and see how many people you can get to go in there to try and infiltrate.
I'm hoping it just doesn't get canceled this year. Things are looking kind of sketchy.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Why?
I've been wanting to go for years.
Yeah. So this is a running joke, is you will see stuff every single year. There's a big thing that comes out and says DEF CON's canceled. Even the promoters will say, yes, it's canceled. But that is a lie. It's not canceled. Show up.
Anybody who falls for the cancellation, we don't want to be there is basically what they're saying.
There are a lot of in-jokes at DEF CON, and I think the best way to experience it is just to come out.
Yeah, and I have to say that I don't think any of us, especially me, get them all.
No,
there's layers upon layers, especially with the whole puzzle solving bit, you know, with the badge and, you know, the like trying to figure out what the overall themes are and find the hidden messages.
Because not only is the badge, and I think we've talked about this in the past, but the badge usually is hackable if it's hardware, where you can get in, you can write programs for it, you can see what mysteries it does or what secrets it holds. And if it's not electronic, which they, you know, they had a few non-electronic ones in recent years, they're different or they include some kind of information that helps you solve other large puzzles or challenges or crypto things throughout the course of the week. So it's it's a first step.
One of the ways to enjoy the con is to hack the con, you know, hack what the messages are, engage in the puzzles, and it's a good time. And there's gambling and alcohol and all the
kind do people try to build those like radio hacker things and like hack the, like actually try to hack the games and hack the casinos? Or
this is really weird. I don't think they would go after the games, but it's really odd to see that much electronic gear and that much wireless gear that close to the gaming floors. Mm-hmm. And you can have it in the backpacks. The hotels haven't said anything in the past, but you know, I was thinking, you know, if at that time, that's probably the best time to bring in radio gear, to bring in like, you know, a little vibrating thing, you know, to do a count, a card count, you know, whatever kind of needs you might need, because there's a ton of wireless activity. There's a ton of just radiation flying around. And then you can say, oh,
and
it's
a
just
lot
this,
of people that
know.
Are looking like they need to be paid special attention yeah. to yeah. by security.
Yeah, this so would be the time. I think Jay's right. This is when you come in and you do some kind of big heist. You know, maybe Ocean's 14 should overlap with DEF CON or 15 or wherever we are in the trilogy.
Yes, that would be quadrilogy. Awesome. All right, so that kills some time.
What else is on the list?
I'm looking now.
I was going to say, it is also interesting when you, like, at the end of the con, when, like, people are starting to leave and new people are coming in, just to see the way those people are looking at all the DEF CON people walking around.
Well, like the first time, when the first year it was at Rio, all the hotel staff were like, you know, it was electric because they just weren't really sure what the heck this was.
That's probably going to be like this year too, because it's going to be new. Now, at this point, I think Vegas knows about DEF CON. Like, hotel HRM people have heard about DEF CON and heard about it moving around. So it's not like, you know, this totally new blind thing. But I think there's probably more mystique and more fear built up around it than, you know, there was before. So.
And then there's the whole legalized gay marriage. So we got that going for us. All right. We had some good stuff to do this last bit of the show, so let's do... that's not going to work because I'm an idiot.
That trick never works.
It never does.
What's your point? When this baby hits
88 miles per hour, you're going to see some serious
All right, I'll let Pete lead off, but I know Lee's going to want to chime in on the subject matter for this weird science.
Maybe.
Yeah, first we got blew up real good. Well, actually real bad. I don't know if you're – I'm sure you heard about the SpaceX Falcon 9 rocket carrying an unmanned Dragon cargo vehicle broke up over the Atlantic Ocean. It had flown for about 2 minutes, and then boom – approximately 139 seconds into the mission and just prior to the first stage separation, the vehicle disintegrated. Apparently, they figured out what happened. Let's see, there's the whole – the two-stage rocket, and with the first stage set down, also known as main engine cutoff, MECO, occurring approximately 159 seconds into the flight. However, approximately 20 seconds before that, the vehicle experienced an anomaly. Elon Musk posted an update soon after saying Falcon 9 experienced a problem shortly before the first stage shutdown. There was an overpressure event in the upper stage liquid oxygen tank. The thing that kind of particularly sucks about this one is that it had the docking port. It was carrying the docking port that would be used for other missions to bring people to the space station.
And it was also carrying two Microsoft HoloLens prototypes that astronauts were going to use on orbit for some augmented reality stuff. So
really,
yes. So two HoloLens prototypes were destroyed along with, you know, important NASA hardware and food.
So they're
going
to have to settle for regular reality and not augmented reality on the space station.
Space is so boring. I can't believe I'm orbiting around the planet I was born on. In this amazing piece of technology, I need to enhance this by putting this device on my... Oh, I feel like I really am in space now.
Wow, everything looks so small with this. I can now see Minecraft in 3D. So
in space.
So it blowed up.
Yep, blew up. And it's important to note, just real quick, that the root cause analysis is ongoing. But yeah, I mean, it's kind of one of those deals that upper stage anomaly, the oxygen tank anomaly, is probably what happened, but they haven't formally determined yet, though. And my wife is texting me here and says that the piece of hardware that was destroyed was called the International Docking Adapter, the IDA. Although they have a second IDA that was delivered to KSC on Friday that they're going to attempt to send up with some other launch vehicle. So that at least is something.
Of course, this wouldn't have happened if they'd have launched it from the Houston Spaceport.
Yep.
That's right. America. The Houston Spaceport, which is a thing that's happening out at Ellington.
Yes.
Apparently.
I don't know what that's about. I think that this whole Houston Spaceport thing is like a sports stadium. Like, you know, we're going to use taxpayer money, give it out to a bunch of our contractor buddies and build this thing. And then what are we going to do with it? Or is it just that they've just declared it?
I think it's more door number two, but I'm not super up to date.
Well,
it's a
program that the
they've got a license
Houston
for it.
Airspace System is doing or whatever, or the Houston Airport System. Yeah, I think it's a licensing thing more than an actual thing.
It's just saying it so before laws come down that say you can't do it.
Yeah, we have approval to do it, but now we just need the money and the design and the engineering and the
ability.
Well, just to feed conspiracies, you know, I think my theory is that the Houston Spaceport is actually hidden inside the old Astrodome, and eventually the top will open and it will reveal itself to all of us.
That's what we should do with the Astrodome is a spaceport. That would actually be really cool.
That would be way better than what.
Yeah, but right now the Astrodome is currently housing the secret army of Jade Helm.
You keep bringing it up.
There's room for both. That's a big space.
Well, yeah, the spaceport might be part of that as well.
What are they doing with the Astrodome
they
right
have
now?
To keep
is it
the aliens
empty?
Somewhere.
It's just it getting more empty as they sell
letting
off
it,
chairs
yeah.
or the seats and so forth.
People
yeah,
are breaking in every once in a while and taking cool pics, but that's kind of all that's happening.
That's sad, man. That's totally
yeah,
sad.
Yeah, well, and the other story of space is we're getting to see more from Rosetta's comet. Apparently, though, it's riddled with sinkholes as the massive ball of ice and dust hurls towards the sun. Its surface is continuing to evolve, is the way they put it on Gizmodo. That's the latest fascinating comet discovery to make its way to Earth from the European Space Agency's Rosetta spacecraft, which has been orbiting Comet 67P since last August. Based on new imaging analysis, scientists have concluded that the series of circular pockmarks on the comet's surface are actually massive sinkholes ranging from tens to hundreds of meters in diameter, and some of them are growing. And Rosetta can peer right into them, said astronomer Dennis Bodewitz of the University of Maryland, who's a co-author of the new comet study, which appears tomorrow in Nature. Almost as soon as Rosetta arrived at the comet last summer, astronomers noted large circular pits dotting the icy body's surface. Since then, the spacecraft's orbit has shrunk tenfold from a distance of 60 miles to 6, which has allowed scientists to take a series of high-resolution surface images using Rosetta's optical spectroscopic and infrared remote imaging system, OSIRIS. You wonder how long did it take them to come up with that to get the name. Camera uses CCD detectors similar to those in digital cameras and smartphones, but it employs mirrors rather than lenses in order to cover a much wider spectral range than what's visible to the human eye. The digital images sent back between July and December revealed ripples in dunes and over 100 regions of exposed water ice, and now 18 sinkholes. Coincidence? I think not.
It's just a teenage
comet.
There's
a golf course on this thing.
It's a teenage comet. It's got comet acne.
So let's see.
Awkward things happening.
We need to send it some comma clearer seals.
Sinkholes where there were no sinkholes before.
Your body is changing. Your comet is changing.
Your comet changes as it gets older.
You may notice new urges and compulsions.
Outgassing in the night.
I was thinking of Fuzzy Bunny from The
Simpsons.
Was
thinking that exactly too. I'm
Troy McClure.
You may remember me. Some educational films as, yeah. All right.
Make way for comets. There are more questions remaining, including the exact nature of the comet core's heat source and whether 67P will become more worm eaten as it gets closer to the sun.
Are there worms? Are there space worms?
Yes.
The comet reaches perihelion. There's your word for the day, which means its closest point to the sun on August 13th. But it's quickly becoming clear that our perception of comets as massive hunks of debris that fly through space until they disintegrate or smack into something is a bit simplistic. Much like planets and moons, there's more to these than meets the eye. Oh, my gosh. Is it going to transform into a giant semi from another planet? Maybe a Camaro.
Please say yes. Please say yes. Please say yes. Watching.
And then we'll find the only Allspark.
Oh, you have to bring the movies.
As long as we don't find Michael Bay, I'll be happy.
The Philae lander will suddenly get messages in the voice of Optimus Prime.
No, I think the Allspark was
in the sinkholes are itching.
No, there was no Allspark in the
They game. Mentioned
no,
the Allspark.
In the first movie, I think there was.
No, you're thinking of the Autobot Matrix of Leadership.
No, I think there was an Allspark in the cartoon, the first one, not the TV series.
Yeah, I think they talked about
the
that
movie
too.
When Optimus Prime died.
No, that's the Autobot Matrix of Leadership. The Allspark may have been. I think the Allspark was in the Gen 1 Transformers, but it was post movie. Going back to playground conversations from when I was 8 years old.
So had we talked about the Jade? What is that? Jade Helm. Before. Did I miss the show? Was I out when you guys?
You might have been out.
Every time you say it, the helicopters get closer.
It just comes up. Lee shuts it down because he's part of the conspiracy.
I wasn't super up to date on this, but I have like even the last Geek Gathering, we saw a pair of helicopters just kind of circling around. I've been tracking planes. Yeah. I've been seeing a lot more military planes around.
What color shirt he's wearing?
Whoa! Dun dun dun.
I'm going to hit you guys with the flashy thing on the way out so you forget all of this.
I think we need to play Bite of the Apple again.
Flashy thing. I'm a flashy thing, you all. What was that called? The Neuralizer. I'm going to neuralize you guys.
In other television news, I finally caught up in Doctor Who to...
I saw Day of the Doctor.
For the Day of the Doctor. The thing that everybody got all excited about a few years ago. And I had no context for it, and I watched it when it came out, and yes, okay, this is fine. But now that I've seen all of the reboot up to that point, it was fantastic.
A lot more invested,
It was fantastic. It was really, really good. If you haven't watched the new Doctor Who reboot, you need to just
Doctor
go.
Who?
Yeah. All right, clever boy.
Yeah, that one, Doctor Who? And the thing about it is it's more than just a simple binge watch, because it's... How many that's lots of episodes.
Well, this
is the 2005, and they skipped a year or two in there. It's not like it comes out.
But
super
there's early. About
seven or eight seasons.
Seven or eight seasons. They're in
call
season
it 12
eight
episodes.
Now.
Yeah, 12, they, 13 episodes.
They didn't reboot for like 20 or 30 years.
Yeah, it took a while. But as far as TARDIS time, that could be 30 seconds. We really don't know.
Right.
It's all relative when you're the doctor.
Well,
it's wibbly wobbly timey wimey stuff going on.
It's been good fun to watch, and now I'm looking at getting a hold of all the 1963 up stuff and watching that. If it's it may
some
not
of it, well, just you, at least you can brag about how it's not watchable and speak from the know, Because some of it, I did try to suffer through the early ones, and there were a couple that I kind of got through, but most of the time I would just zone out and program for a few hours and be like, "What just happened?"
Might work better for the more casual viewer, there were some specials as they came up on like there was a big anniversary and they had some specials where they on BBC America, I don't know if they're available on Netflix right now or not, but they kind of picked, they had a Tom Baker one, they had some different ones and they talked about the episodes, they had interviews with people and some of that. So it was sort of a best of that got you through some of the other.
That was all bundled up with the Day of the Doctor, happening. So
right.
Yeah, so I think if
an original episode.
Yeah, so if you go in, if like for instance if you go buy it on Google Play or go buy it on Amazon or whatever, you can get it to where it's bundled with all the interviews and all the everything. So that's actually kind of worthwhile.
In other Netflix geek news, kind of geek because we're also a car show, the it looks like Top Gear has been picked up by Netflix to continue on with the original three hosts and the original producer.
Did you hear the
Dig staying on?
The joke title that people were think were saying it was going to be?
No, I missed that.
House of Cars.
Oh. That'd be great if Jeremy Clarkson just turned to the camera.
And now, House of Cars, the most car-related Netflix show in the world. That was my bad Clarkson.
Was that James May? I'm sorry.
No, it was Captain Clarkson. That's like my go-to, like, plane show. Like if I get on a plane.
I was gonna say your impersonation. Like when I want to impersonate someone, I just go straight.
Well, my wife had a great idea for the reboot of Top Gear. That's what we could call it, I guess, the reboot of Top Gear. Is that they should have if you watch Top Gear, if you're a fan of the show at all, they have the star in a reasonably priced car segment where somebody comes on the show and they take them around, see how fast they can do a lap around their track. And so Cynthia said, well, they should have a segment where it's like, okay, you can drive this Bugatti Veyron, once in a lifetime opportunity, or you could punch Jeremy Clarkson in the face.
So tough.
Yeah, it'd be a tough choice. Or then she came up with the idea of punch Jeremy Clarkson in the face for charity.
So, Top Gear.
The other twist, though, should be that they start with, a Veyron, and then every time somebody takes the car driving, then they lower the quality of the vehicle. Until
gets to where people are just punching Clarkson
in the face.
So Top Gear is getting Top Gun, this is kind of odd. So it's getting a reboot as well, and from what I can tell, and normally I wouldn't be all that excited about Top Gun. I still don't know if I am excited about it.
Top Gear.
Wait, I'm confused.
Top Gun with Maverick the Goose, that whole thing. Just fighter pilots. Maverick the Goose. 26 weeks on whatever. They're making a Top Gun 2, and supposedly this time instead of like live flying, it's going to be drone based. This is so ridiculous. There's no way.
Is Tom Cruise gonna be in it?
Yeah, I think he's going to be in it. He might be like a drone instructor. I'm not entirely sure. This sounded a little bit ridiculous, but it checked out. This is maybe going to happen. I should recheck it. But it looks
there's going to
be a Top Gun 2, and it's going to be about the movie's going to flop, but they're saying like, hey, drone, it's really, we're attacking people with drones. It's the new fighter pilots. Are kind of,
Your body is writing checks your ego can't cash.
You're dangerous.
I am dangerous. Chomp.
Well, let's
Top Gun 2 to take on drones on Military Times yesterday, so it looks like it's going to be a drone show.
All right, what's that, Pete?
At least now, and then when they decide, when they can't get the script right and they go through five directors, it's going to end up being that they're running drones for Amazon and doing deliveries. But it'll still have Tom Cruise in it, so that'll be nice.
Maybe they get Michael Bay.
Top drone.
Oh, that's actually really cool. That should be the name. With a robotic Kelly McGillis.
Well, we're running out of time, it looks like, or getting close to running out of time here. We've got about 5 minutes left in the show, so we'll
take calls.
We'll be wrapping things
open
up
the phone lines.
Well, we'll remind people that Friday's the Geek Gathering.
That's right, Friday is the Geek Gathering.
2808 Milam at Drew, Midtown Houston.
Go to geekradio.com for all the details if you want to come and hang out and gather geeking with us.
Geek the Gathering.
It'll be a lot of fun. It's
throw some darts at Cones, Wine, and Dots.
I know it's a holiday weekend, and if you're going out of town, I wish you a lot of luck and have a good time. But we're going to – I know I'm staying in town. 4th of July is fine, but it's a chance to not be on the road.
Fireworks are Saturday, so you're not going to miss anything if you come out Friday.
That's right.
Unless you come and start a fight with Lee.
Yeah!
Punch Lee in the face.
Bring it.
Or drive a Veyron, your choice.
Yeah.
BYOV.
I wonder if it's going to be the weather. It's going to be good enough for me to bring my 1971.
It feels like it's
Veyron.
Never going to stop raining.
No, it does.
This is not good.
Did you not drag race with Cone in drag yet?
In drag?
We had our cars
that was last
out
weekend.
We had our cars out at the last Geek Gathering, and I was really glad that I left my hood up. Cone had we had our hoods up, showing off our engine compartments, because that's what guys with muscle cars do. And he put the hood down on his, and some drunk woman decided that she needed to lay out on his hood to get a picture taken.
Whoa!
And scratched up his hood.
No! Oh no!
Bad news. All right. Well, there's the music, and that means it's time to go. So yeah, join us on Friday for the Geek Gathering.
And we will be back next Wednesday night for more Technology Bites. You're listening, have been listening, which you have been listening to.
Indeed.
With me, Jay Lee.
To which you have been listening.
Perfect show.
Dangly participles. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Lee.
And he's
Groove House.
Hi, Groove House.
Hello.
Bye. Come on.
This is V. Patel, Vice Chair of the KPFT Local Station Board.
And this is Dwayne Lark, Chair of the Local Station Board.
In fact, this announcement is about a vacancy on the Local Station Board.
And V, I'm very excited about the opportunity to fill this vacancy on the board. And this is a great opportunity for us to increase the diversity on the board.
I agree. Women, people under 40, and people of color are currently underrepresented on the board.
Well, now that we have them interested, let's tell them how to apply.
Well, you must be a member in good standing. Your application should consist of a short bio, your qualifications to serve on the board, as well as ideas to assist the board in accomplishing its duties.
Submit your completed application to lsb@kpft.org. That's lsb@kpft.org. Remember, the deadline for applications is July 8th, 2015, 5 p.m.
For more information about the LSB, go to kpft.org.
KPFT Houston.
Why donate your car to KPFT? You can free up space in your garage, you can avoid the hassles of selling your car, there's no need to pay hefty car repair bills, and you turn that unwanted car into an IRS tax deduction. In addition, you're helping to make the Houston area better with unique arts, music, and culture. You help keep options on the airwaves. Best of all, making a car donation is easy and always free. Just call 1-855-573-8227 or visit kpft.org to donate your old vehicle to support KPFT. Again, that number is 1-855-KPFT-CAR. Thanks for your help. This is 90.1 KPFT Houston, kpft.org worldwide.